Why do you say that, Father? You aren't afraid, are you?
No. But I respect some of the superstitions of others. Often they are founded in fact.
Broadcasting live from our Sanctum Sanctorum in Venice, California, this is the Sixth Sense Society. I'm your host, Krista, here with our producer, Michael, and today you are tuning in to Spell It Out, Magic, Reflections, and Shadows, where I take a topic and run with it. So this will be the last Spell It Out for 2023, and so I thought I would do a tarot-related topic. The topic I'm going to talk about is tarot card reversals. Are they really necessary? Are they simply a complicated, unnecessary thing? But before we get started, Michael has a few announcements.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back. It's our last month before... sorry, my voice is going a little bit. Last month before our hiatus in December, as Krista said. So we've got some great shows coming up. Next week, we will be celebrating our fifth anniversary. We've just finishing our fifth season, and we will be joined by our original co-host, Kristen Napier, which is going to be awesome. We'll be excited to catch up with her and reminisce a little bit and talk about what the show has been and where it's headed and so forth. And so join us for that for sure. After that, we have Jim McGrath coming back, and he's going to talk about the importance of ritual in our lives in terms of our spirituality, our healing, and in particular his work with Imagination Workshop, which is an incredible organization that deals with vets that have PTSD and other at-risk individuals by getting them involved in the performing arts, which Jim has been a part of for a very long time. So I'm really excited about that as well. And then we're going to end the month with our good friend Jackie Smith coming back, and she is going to talk about her new podcast, in particular, The Curse Breakers, which is just an awesome name. So we're really super, super pumped to hear what she has to say about that and catch up on all of the news with her as well. So join us to get all the information on our website, sixthsensesociety.com, S-I-X-T-H, all spelled out. And while you're there, buy us a coffee on Ko-Fi, and if you can afford to. But main thing, go to YouTube, click like and subscribe, and support our show. And don't be afraid to chat with us during the broadcast. So not going to take up any more time, so I'm going to kick it back to you. So take it away, Krista.
Great. Thank you, Michael. Yeah, I'm pretty excited to have Kristen back on the show, and it's going to be really fun to reminisce about how the show got started. I have mentioned, I think in previous shows, a little bit how we don't use tarot card reversals, but I thought I'd dive in a little deeper into why I think they are an unnecessary complication. Let me start by saying that in the very beginning, I started reading tarot in the late 1900s. Okay, that was an interesting slip. Maybe I did actually. 1996, 97. And one of the first books I did buy at the time was Anthony Lewis's Tarot, Plain and Simple. I do remember that. And I did recently buy a later edition. I think it's been changed since I read it first. There weren't as many books out in terms for tarot to learn, but that, you know, I needed some kind of a starting place. And one of the things that, not just because of his book, but also other books, I found really confusing from the very beginning is people could not decide what a reversal means. So you would read, some people would say, well, it's the opposite of whatever the card is. And then others would say, well, no, it's a reflection of the potential of what the card means. And I haven't looked at a lot of recent books that talk about reversals, but I did go back since Anthony Lewis's book still sells really well. I went back to sort of refresh my mind about how, since I know he has reversals and believes in it, how he uses reversals. And to my point of it being very confusing, let's take the five of coins or pentacles, as he calls it, as an example. So in his book, he basically, for each card, he'll have an upright meaning, then keywords and phrases, some of which are extremely long and somewhat contradictory, situation advice, and then people. And then he has the reversed meaning. But within the reversed meaning, this is where it gets really kind of odd. I had forgotten this, so I don't know if it was in the edition in the 1990s or not. He has both a positive and negative reversed meaning. So it's like a, I don't know, a double negative in a sense. And if that's extremely confusing to me, like, how do you know which one it is? So to give you an example, the other thing is what I have found in a lot of books is they also don't have a system with the reversal. So sometimes it'll be the opposite of the card. Sometimes it will be also negative. So you don't get away from the negativity. Maybe it's a little less negative. Sometimes it's more negative. So there's no sort of consistency with the reversals. And unlike, say, the book by Yoav Ben-Dov, which I do recommend this book if you want to understand how to break a card down symbolically. It's based on the Marseille Tarot. And so it really dives into the symbolism. But what I love is that most of the meanings of the cards, from what I could tell, actually come from his looking at the actual card and trying to symbolically say what it means. And you may disagree with some of the interpretations, but you can see where it's coming from. And it's just really a really interesting book that way. And it's less confusing in terms of, in fact, you don't even really necessarily have to memorize as much because you could start to look at the symbols and say, well, this is what it means for me. Oh, hi, Caroline. Nice to see you. Caroline's tuning in. So I wanted to read you a little bit from Tarot Plain and Simple to show you what I mean by the confusion of the whole reversal idea. So let's take Five of Pentacles, which gets almost always a bad rap in most of the tarot books, and except it doesn't in this book by the Marseille Tarot. And so upright, it means down and out, and it's poverty, the Five of Pentacles. Now reversed, it's faith restored. So that sounds very promising. But then he goes into this idea again of a plus reversal and a minus reversal. So if it's the positive reversal, it's a turn for the better, spiritual awareness, renewed faith, the end of poverty. But then the negative one is unemployment, frustration, adversity, despair, extreme poverty. So here's the case where the negative is even worse than the upright. So that's one example. There's other ones too. And it does seem like the more quote unquote negative cards often don't seem to get a break, no matter what, if they're upright or reversed. And I'm totally opposed to that. You know, I think it's very much an oversimplification. So early on, I was very confused by reversals. And I did it. I must have used reversals for at least 2 years. I had some success, evidently, because people came back to me. I don't remember everything about using the reversals because it's been a long time since I've used it. But eventually when we moved out to California, we got introduced to the Kabbalah and on our own, we studied Kabbalah. And then we realized you do not need reversals. And the reason being that, even if you don't do the Kabbalah, there's 78 cards in a deck and there's plenty of cards that are both challenging and easier to use in terms of energies. And there's enough combinations with 78 cards to have plenty to work with. And so with the Kabbalah, it added this extra dimension to how we perceive the cards. And we began, as we've talked in the past about Kabbalah, to see things in a much more nuanced way. Since we're talking about the Five of Pentacles, I will tell you a Five of Pentacles story. I remember it distinctly. And I had been studying Kabbalah for a while, and I was working on the beachhead. And at the time, it was a volunteer job, and I did all kinds of things like writing, and it's a newspaper, collective newspaper, very liberal. And it was coming towards the holidays, and I, for the first time, was going to take some time off. And I was, from everything for like 2 weeks. And I mean, I was so excited because I hardly ever took time off from my work and things like that. And especially from the beachhead, I'd been working and volunteering for a while. And then the person who was really kind of in charge of making sure it got out just decided to go off to Europe and kind of dumped everything on me and this other guy. And I remember getting the Five of Coins that month. I was doing like little readings for myself. And so I was sort of put into this situation that was somewhat stressful for me and unexpected, whether or not I was going to be able to take on extra work instead of the opposite. And I remember, you know, with the Five of Coins, that idea of like really digging in and committing to things. And then also because the fives can connect to the middle pillar, that might be a good thing for you to do. I did do it. And I ended up like really working very hard, and me and this other guy, because he had to be the one to sort of like make sure it got out and everything. He did the layout. I was so proud of doing that, and I felt so good. So even though I had this initial like, oh my God, I'm tired, I don't want to work, I just dug in, I did the work, and I felt really good about it. So that was just one of my experiences of Five of Coins, seeming like maybe a little negative in the beginning, but it turned out to be a really very good experience for me. So anyway, once we had met up with the Kabbalah, we dropped using reversals. And I don't use them. Like, you don't need to use them. Another thing is that most traditional, I don't want to use the word traditional, most tarot decks that are part of the tarot lineage are rectangular. There are circular ones. And the images are made to be seen upright. And I can't really overemphasize the importance of looking at the images. And when you reverse the cards, they don't make any sense upside down. And, you know, it's part of the way of developing the intuitive side of the tarot is gazing at the images and then looking how they all play out together in a pattern. So you're, even if in the very beginning, what I would do, I would sort of say, okay, I'm looking for a storyline. How does the story look? Where is it going? Are there some side stories? What does the end look like? You know, so you can even look at that and trying to stay away too from seeing, you know, cards that look more negative as only bad, and because it just won't hold up. I can guarantee you it won't hold up. And it's just not true about the cards. I've seen perfectly beautiful cards where people are messing their lives up. So just so you know. But one of the things about the tarot, I think, is it's meant to be looked at as an art for a reason. And then when you're working with the Kabbalistic style tarot, where they've coordinated the colors to the different consciousnesses, you know, the different sephirah, it becomes even more important. So you're using this, you know, as a way to reflect on a huge symbol, which will develop a deeper intuition with you, with your own ability to read the cards. Because I do think there is, you do develop something if you use the cards a lot, whether you become more clairvoyant or precognitive, but it's a natural development. Honestly, you don't even have to try, I would say. But when you work with the Kabbalah, you don't need the reversals at all. And then the other thing is that the tarot is a very elegant system. And 78 cards, it's all you need, as I said before. And it's a simple system in a sense, but it's very difficult at times to interpret. And then I think doing the reversed cards, and particularly if you have like layers of meanings with the reversed cards, you are overcomplicating a very elegant system. It's meant to, even though Michael and I both believe in developing your logic and your ability to analyze things, nevertheless, you don't want to be in a reading going, oh, is the Ace of Coins reversed? Is that a potential? Or does it mean the opposite? What is the opposite of new beginnings? Is it an ending card? I mean, that's what I used to be doing when I was like, you don't want to have that kind of monkey mind going on when you're doing a reading. And that's what reversals do. And for some people, they get really scared by reversed cards. Like, oh my God, everything's reversed. And again, what is the purpose of tarot? Is it to scare you? Then okay, maybe if you're really into horror movies and things like that, I don't think it's there to scare you. And I think I was a little afraid of reversals, to tell you the truth. But not only like everything is reversed, you think, oh my God, I must be cursed or something. All my cards are reversed, and maybe you just didn't shuffle the cards right. So to me, I think it's really totally unnecessary. It also means too that a lot of books that use reversals, they have very specific meanings. And so then you have even more memorizing to do, which again, Michael and I can teach you how to read the cards without having to memorize such meticulous things that don't even, you know, really work over time. So that's basically, that's mainly what I wanted to talk about with the reversals. I know there are people that are quite competent readers. They used reversed cards. I used to, when I worked at the Mystic Journey bookstore and the other bookstore, you used to be able to really hear the different readings because we would sit side by side in rooms and you could hear people talking about the reversed card. And as I said, I think it's just an unnecessary complication. And what your one system you could look at, and we never really did it, but Aleister Crowley talks about the dignified and ill-dignified cards connected to the element. So it's kind of like astrology that way. Certain, you know, does earth and water get along with each other, and maybe fire and water does not. So you look and see which cards fall against each other. And I think that's a legitimate system if you want to work with something like that again, because I think it's also cohesive. And I think the tarot is a cohesive system. It didn't start out that way, but I think there are different ways you can approach that cohesiveness. But I think if you just have these sort of random meanings of what the reverse cards mean, and really that's what it seems like to me, because I looked at several books again to refresh myself, and I said, I don't even know how they get some of these meanings. It's like they're just pulling it out of their butt or something. That's what it felt like anyway. There is a funny story about a reversal that I wanted to share, and it's from Rhapsodies of the Bizarre, the tarot essays of Anton Court de Gebelin and M. Le Comte de Millet. So I was reading this. This is one of the most important essays that, you know, basically is in the history of the tarot. And it's hard to get in English, but you can get it in French. There was a guy that translated in English, but that book's out of print. But anyway, they're talking about the Hanged Man. And a lot of the older tarot books want to find the four virtues in the tarot, and they're missing prudence. And so he wants the hangman to be prudence. And so he says something really funny, though. So here is his words. Prudence is among the four cardinal virtues. Could the Egyptians omit her in this portrait of human life? But then again, one does not find her in the game. One sees her place under the number 12 between strength and temperance, a man hanged by his feet. But who hanged this man? It is the work of a rotten, arrogant card maker who, not understanding the beauty of the allegory contained in this tableau, has taken upon himself to correct it and thereby even to entirely disfigure it. So the funny thing is that he thinks that the hangman should not be upside down. He should be upright. And then he goes on to explain why. But I just loved how he just wants to insult some card maker, some unknown card maker. And it's one of the fun things if you read especially some of the older occult books. Arthur Waite has it too in some of his books. These little snide remarks about other, you know, occult figures, and it's just awesome. They all gossiped in their own way through their books. So I think that's what I'm going to say for the tarot card reversals. I would say, you know, give it a thought. Try not doing tarot card reversals for a while, even if you don't use the Kabbalah. As I said, there's plenty of challenging and enlightening cards, and you'll never run out of interpretations, because I wish I knew statistically how many patterns can be made with 78 cards, but it's going to be a lot statistically. So you're not going to run out of ideas. So to this show, I decided I'd go back to some of my original idea of sharing a spell with you that I particularly like. This one, I have not used this exact spell, but I have used some of the ideas. And one of the things that many people like to do is to do cleansing rituals. And I thought, well, you know, it's always a good time to do a cleansing ritual. And at least for me right now, you know, before the holiday season, this is a good time to do any kind of cleansing. And I am particularly fond of brooms. And I have only a couple of magical brooms, but I just like brooms in general. I think they're really cool. So I went to my 5,000 spell encyclopedia book by Judica Ills, which I find a wonderful resource. I mean, it's got so many interesting folklore and spells. It's just, I mean, if you open it up, you're going to be distracted by what you see. It's just really, really good. And it's really easy to find things in it. So I went into the cleansing area in the book, and I found this broom cleansing spell. And this is really simple, but it has, you know, different components. So with the broom cleansing, it's about cleaning first with the brooms and then using both a floor wash and some kind of incense afterwards. So the first part, it's pretty simple, the cleansing. And they say, you know, you can use any kind of broom, though some people have a special broom for cleansing. I personally would not have the room for too many brooms in my house, so I just have the one. So you take your broom and you sweep the dust from west to east. And then you burn the dust and toss the ashes outdoors. Next, you complete the ritual by mopping the floors with a magical floor wash, followed by a protective incense fumigation. Now, I have carpet on some of my floors, and some don't have carpet. You can also use washes oftentimes on the walls. And of course, you want to make sure you don't put anything on there that might interact with paint or something. And then the other thing, since I have birds, you do want to be careful what you use with your floor wash, because I only learned fairly, I don't know, last 3 or 4 years, there's just certain things that are bad for birds. I know it's true also for dogs and cats. It seems like it's mostly for them, it's eating it. But for birds, smells can be really toxic. So you can definitely Google and find a list of toxic ingredients to most birds. And so that would be really important. So then I picked from, there's quite a few, you know, different floor washes, and you can buy some good floor washes yourself, you know, from some places, and they're not really expensive if you don't have time to make it. And so the floor wash I picked was, first of all, it's called the Aura Cleansing Floor Wash. And before I tell you what the ingredients are, I never thought about this, but evidently, according to this particular encyclopedia, there are two standard methods for floor wash in general. One is to fill a bucket with warm water and add whatever the magical infusion is with white vinegar. And two, you can also create the infusion and pour it into an empty bucket. Pour enough boiling salted water over it to fill the bucket, and then again, add some white vinegar. White vinegar is used a lot for a lot of things, actually, for cleansing. I mean, I use it for just normal cleansing, so it's really interesting. And I like this particular one because it seemed pretty simple, the Aura Cleansing Floor Wash. And I liked what she has to say about it. It's using agrimony and peppermint. And agrimony repels and sends back hexes, and peppermint is an aggressive cleaner that beckons the presence of helpful, benevolent spirits. Funny enough, I recently started using Dr. Bronner's peppermint soap lately, so I thought that was a good synchronicity. So combined together, they're very potent. So then you make a strong infusion from the dried agrimony and peppermint, and there's different amounts that I've read you can use. But basically in infusion, you want them to steep for a while in the water, and then you're going to drain the water out, and I mean the herbs out, and use the water that's left. And you add that to the bucket of water with the white. In this case, you can also use rice vinegar. And then you cleanse floors and surfaces with that. And then after that, you can do some kind of an incense smudging situation too. And if you're doing that, then I would make sure you crack the windows, even if it's just one window. My main one that I use all the time is dragon's blood. I love dragon's blood. You can get it in incense sticks, and you can get it I forget what it's called, where you burn it over the charcoals, it makes a little bit of smoke, but it might, you know, sometimes it sets off your smoke detector too, so it does for me. But I just think that a lot of times, you know, magic, this is kind of like kitchen witch magic to me, because it's a lot of this comes from a time where you can see, you know, people used floor washes probably like this or similar to this and added their herbs, whether they knew it or not. I think some of them probably did know it. I think that the idea of using herbs in cleansing is more also just folklore, so that people would use, for instance, you know, lavender to help you sleep, that kind of thing. So it's very inexpensive, and it's just, you can make it like part of your ritual altogether with this kind of thing. So I certainly am planning on doing a little bit more of that. And it always feels good to do that. I remember when I was living in Woodstock, one of my friends had studied with the Lakota Indian for like 10 years, she and her husband. And what was interesting about cleansing for her, she used a lot of sage, And I know that's controversial, but she was trained to do that by Lakota Indians for over 10 years. And anyway, whenever there was something very like heated in the house, like somebody cried, someone got mad, she would immediately take out her smudge stick and she would start smudging things. And I'd never seen anything quite like that before. And so that idea of also, you know, cleansing things while they are going on in your place, or, you know, or if you've been crying or someone, like I said, just had a very emotional, I guess, explosion of any kind, it's a really good idea to do it. And also something that I read coming from an indigenous point of view, at least a North American indigenous point of view, I remember reading that your home was a place of peace. And it was, you know, if you were to have like a really volatile disagreement, to take it outside and not keep it in the home. And I know that's probably not necessarily easy to do, but as a practice where if you think, okay, my home is my oasis and I want to create a vibration of peace, it may not be a bad idea if one person in the family is upset, maybe they go for a walk for a little while. Or, and again, of course, you know, with kids and things like that, you're going to have emotional explosions. But just having that attitude that home is safe and peaceful and trying to create that vibe, I think is really, I thought it was very beautiful. And after that time, I said, well, I'm going to try and do that more. You know, I'm going to try and not repress things, but I want my home to be where I go in. I want to feel, I'm home and I can sort of relax and let my guard down. And I think living in Los Angeles, especially, this has been a real challenge, but I still try to do it as much as I can. And having birds around that are very sensitive to you and your energy, it definitely helps me to recognize I'm trying to keep, you know, a nice oasis for my birds as well. And of course, my husband. So neither of us are as sensitive as the birds. So they do have a sort of priority. So that is the spell I wanted to share with you. I think you could probably adapt it using other ingredients, you know, just that, especially the wash. I think that's a pretty straightforward thing that you can do. I got a funny, there's an interesting question from Caroline. Do you ever do readings in your dreams? Oh my God, yes. Oh, it's just so annoying. Especially when I first started, I would like be doing readings and sometimes there's like a whole bunch of people waiting for readings and it's very, very tiring actually. Though some of the tarot readings I've had in dreams. Now, other times there are tarot dreams that are really interesting that teach me something about the tarot. But absolutely, throughout the years, I do readings in my dreams. I still do sometimes. And I'm not sure what that's about, to tell you the truth. It just, I don't know if the brain just can't turn off. And, you know, I guess it's like musicians maybe dreaming about music if you do anything a lot. And then, oh, so yeah, you had a dream. Caroline had a dream about the devil card. Wow, that's kind of cool. Yeah, I don't know. I can't remember my specific tarot dreams. I have them written down. Maybe I'll do a show on tarot dreams. That might be a really interesting one to do. And people can sort of come in and talk about their own dreams. And sometimes I have tarot figures also that are, you can tell, are totally tarot figures coming alive in the dreams. And a couple of dreams with Aleister Crowley. Yep, those are some of my favorite ones. They were really interesting dreams. So, and then in her case, the devil card was talking to her and teaching her. Well, that's cool. That's amazing. So I've come to the end of my time, it sounds like. I hope you enjoyed what I have to say about tarot card reversals, and try out that spell if you want to do a cleansing spell and let me know how it goes with you. Thank you for tuning in today. Join us next time as we continue to explore the esoteric and the obscure together. Have a great rest of your November. Of course, I'll be back on the regular show, but this is it for Spell It Out in 2023. Thank you all.